meeting for August 8th, 2023, 4 o'clock p.m. First is the Open Meetings Act. A copy of the Open Meetings Act, Nebraska Revised State Statute 84-1407 through 84-1414 is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for today's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that we use for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations, and then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action, and we ask that the public not interrupt the director's discussion and action. Thank you. First one is quorum call.
Father?
Present.
Jeff?
Here.
Jefferson?
Here. Number four, adoption of agenda.
So moved.
Motion? Have a second.
Second.
Item number five. Oh, roll call.
Jeff?
Yes.
Bonnet?
Yes.
Chairman?
Aye. Item number five, proof of publication of meeting notice, which will become part of the permanent record. Item number six, presentation of the 2022 groundwater quality monitoring results, Philip Pates and Michaela Cherry, USGS.
Good afternoon, directors.
Good afternoon.
So, we have our long-awaited USGS report on the water quality in our for groundwater in our district for 2022. I have Michaela Cherry here with me from the USGS, and she's going to go through a presentation, kind of give you guys an overview of what was sampled, where, and kind of what those results were, and how is that kind of leading to an impact on our district. So I'll turn this over to Michaela.
Okay. So for this presentation, I'll just give a little bit of background on kind of the sampling plan currently and historically, an overview of the 2022 results, where we are in 2023, and then where you can find all of the data.
Michaela, before you start, give your name.
Oh, I'm Michaela Cherry from the USGS.
Okay.
So the USGS has been working with Apapio NRD since 1992 to collect these groundwater samples as part of the NRD's groundwater management plan to monitor for contaminants like nitrate, atrazine, arsenic, uranium, whatever might come up. And then we also take additional nutrients and pesticides along with those samples just to see kind of an overview of the groundwater quality. And so there's kind of two sections, two phases of the groundwater. So each year there's a different aquifer that's targeted. So in 2022 it was the Missouri Alluvial Aquifer, and so we focused on sampling municipal wells, pivots, private wells, domestic wells, so just in that aquifer. And then in addition to that, there are also the monitoring wells that are owned and maintained by the NRD throughout all four of the main aquifers, and so all of those are also sampled every year. And those generally are well clusters, so you'll have like two or three wells at different depths, and so it can kind of give you an idea of throughout the entire span of the aquifer what's going on. And so for 2022, we had 61 total samples. 30 of those samples were in the Missouri aquifer, which is the pink-red on the map, so you can see all those sampling locations. And then we had 31 of the monitoring well cluster samples that were not in the Missouri aquifer, and you can see those mapped throughout the other aquifers as well. We sampled for over 30 major ions, trace elements, and nutrients. And then we also run all of our samples through an in-house pesticide screening, and if we get a hit on anything, we send it into the lab for further analysis. And then some years we don't get any hits, so we'll just select five samples at random to send in for further analysis, just to make sure that we're not missing anything that we might be missing in our in-house, just preliminary sampling. So now we're going to move on to the actual results. So starting with nitrate, because it's one of the big ones that people tend to care about a lot. For the Missouri aquifer, over in the pink still, you can see we have a lot of really low nitrate. And then if we look at our monitoring well clusters, which are the breakouts, where you can see the different well depths. So your shallow well is a short one, and then deep. Overall, again, nitrate is fairly low, with the exception of there's three wells that have elevated nitrate and have kind of had that elevated nitrate historically. So we're going to talk about two of them. The first one will be the Takema well. Does this guy have a laser pointer? Okay. Uh-huh. Okay, so the Takema well, which is up here in the Takema Cemetery, we'll talk about this guy, and then down here, on the bottom right, the Springfield well. So we'll move kind of more in depth to talk about those and kind of their historic patterns. So first up, the Takema well. The shallow well has the highest nitrate, but it's been trending downward for the past 5, 8, almost 10 years now, and then has kind of sort of leveled off right above 10. We'll probably need a few more years to see if that's really leveled off, if it's still going to decrease, if maybe it'll increase again. And then one of the interesting things about the Takema wells is that the deep and the medium wells are really variable. So like 1 year, you can see it might be 20, the next year it might be 4. And so we think that the kind of just like the amount of rain you get each year and the water level really impacts what we're seeing in terms of nitrate in these wells. And so I think these could be good candidates for like a more continuous water level monitoring at some point in the future to kind of get a better idea of how the water level and the nitrate are correlated. And then the deep well kind of sees that same variability, but compared to, you know, like 20 years ago, we're not seeing quite as high nitrates in that deep well. So it bounces, but kind of in a range that isn't necessarily concerning in terms of a water quality standard. And then for the Springfield wells, all three wells kind of tell the same story of increasing nitrate, just at different levels. And then for all three wells, again, for the past, you know, maybe 5 years, they kind of look like perhaps they're starting to level out. And so I think that'll be interesting to see in the next few years kind of if they continue to level out, if perhaps they decrease or they start increasing again. And so, yeah, that's where we are on nitrate. And then so now we're going to move on to the other constituents just in the Missouri aquifer because that's the one we focused on. Okay, so the first one's arsenic. So arsenic is a commonly, not necessarily common, but it's a naturally occurring contaminant that happens a lot in alluvial aquifers. That's generally where you find it if you're finding it naturally occurring. The human health standard is 10 micrograms per liter. And in the Missouri alluvial aquifer, there were a few wells that exceeded that 10 micrograms per liter. And then a number of wells that were below that. And so, again, it's naturally occurring, so it's not like a human contaminant, but it is something that does have a health standard associated with it. And then the next one is iron. So iron doesn't have a health standard, but does have like a taste and appearance standard. Generally, I feel like if you drink water with really high iron, you know it because it's got that really like metallic irony taste, and it tends to turn your bathtubs really orange. And so the Missouri alluvial is really high in iron throughout. Again, that's really common for alluvial aquifers, which the Missouri is one because it's right on the Missouri. And so you can see that a lot of the wells that we sampled have pretty high iron. So again, not a health concern, but just like an appearance. The next one is manganese. And so manganese in general, a lot of times municipalities like to keep the standard below 50 micrograms per liter, just because, again, you have that appearance. Manganese tends to have like a black staining or turns black when you can see it. And then there's a human health recommendation of 300 micrograms per liter. And so, again, like iron, manganese is really high in the Missouri alluvial aquifer. And so, just to let you guys know. And then the last one that I wanted to touch on is uranium. I know there's been a few news articles recently about groundwater and uranium and nitrate all being correlated, and so I wanted to show what we had for the Missouri alluvial aquifer. So all of the wells were well below the drinking water standard for uranium, which is kind of to be expected because there's not very high nitrate in the Missouri alluvial, so there's no nitrate to kind of like kick up any uranium that might be there. Really low uranium, just to, in case anyone was worried about the Missouri and uranium. It's all good. And so for our update for 2023, this year is the Platte Elkhorn alluvial sampling, and then all of those monitoring well clusters. And so far, all 30 of the domestic wells have been sampled. So all the wells in the Platte and the Elkhorn have already been sampled, and then 12 of the cluster wells have been sampled. So not the like entire cluster, but like 12 wells out of the 30 total have been sampled. So we're currently still sampling those cluster wells and are planning on finishing up at the throughout like the end of this month into the first week of September. So sampling is going well for that. And then if you are looking to find any of this data, there's lots of places you can access it. So you can look on the NRD website. You can also go to the, if you want to download all the data, the USGS NWIS website, or if you just want to look at the data on a map, the USGS like mapper website is useful. All of this data is also in the Nebraska Clearinghouse, and that's where this screenshot is from, so you can see all of the data there as well. And then the latest publication that we have for the Papio, we talked about these results last year and the year before. This was sampling for the hormones and pharmaceuticals. That report is out, so if you want to read the whole report, it's available as well. Yeah, and then a lot of contact information if you want to contact anyone. And I realize I spoke really quickly, so I'm happy to go back to any of those slides if you guys want to look at them further.
Well, we appreciate that. So, thank you.
Yep.
Are you finished?
Yep.
Okay. We could have a motion on this item.
No, there's no action.
Just that. Okay. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Thank you very much.
Nice work.
Thank you. Item number 7, contact with JEO Consulting Group for groundwater modeling. Philip?
Thanks. Yeah. Hello again, directors. So as was in the memorandum, our interlocal agreement with the Lower Platte North, Lower Platte South, Papio, and Nebraska Department of Natural Resources. We went through a consultant selection process and selected JEO to build a groundwater model for the three districts and the Department of Natural Resources for us. I kind of want to go into a little bit of history just to kind of remind everybody of what happened, how we got here, and why the selection process the way it was as opposed to the way the normal process follows. So when the AEM hydrogeologic framework was nearing completion, there was a lot of discussion on what would be beneficial for the NRDs in the Lower Platte Basin to have in order to be a good tool for us to kind of determine some of the real questions that we kind of had hanging out there that we didn't or weren't able to answer sufficiently without a numerical model. And so there was discussions then to form an interlocal agreement with the Lower Platte NRDs, and the initial interlocal was completed then in April of 2022. October of 2022. And so the discussion, we then had meetings, walked through what kind of model we would need, what kind of questions we would need it to answer, what would we think that would cost, that sort of thing. And so ultimately that interlocal was approved and signed. Papio then was given the honor of being the administrators of that contract. And so then we applied for a WSF grant last year. That was, we did not get that. Looked at what was going on with WSF, what we think we can make work with the money, and we reapplied for the WSF at the $250,000 level this year. We amended the interlocal in April of this year to kind of boost up what the individual contributions for each one of the entities was. We got then, so then fast forward, we actually were now awarded that WSF grant, so we got a WS grant for $250,000 for the construction of this model. And so based upon the wording within the interlocal agreement, we were able to go ahead and put out bids for the construction of that model as a group. And we did that in June, on June 6th. Those applications closed June 3rd. We interviewed prospective consultants July 17th and 18th. And so as a group, the interlocal group, with a voting member, each of us having voting members, selected that consultant on July 19th. And so those members were pretty much comprised of those that within the interlocal group that either had knowledge of groundwater modeling, had an intimate familiarity with the model objectives and the hydrogeologic nature in each of our districts. And so we selected JEO after several hours of really intense discussion on the merits and drawbacks of each one of the proposals, and got a proposal back from JEO on July 28th, which is, I think, Gene sent everybody. So you guys should have a copy of that proposal and what's all in that. And so the end result of that is that JEO, or Papio, we are the administrators of this, but we work through all these decision-making processes as a group with the ILA. And so the total bid then for the construction of this model for a singular model covering this area was $612,823.60, of which the total amount that Papio is responsible for is $63,024.03. And so that's about $21,008 a year. For 3 years that it'll take for this total process to be completed. And in terms of, why is the model important? Well, really there are questions that we have that really can't be answered easily without a numerical model. You can do an analytical model. You can come about answering some of these questions in other ways. But the numerical model allows you to have a little bit more flexibility and a wider range of questions that you can ask that previously we couldn't. And the Papio really has just spent years and years really kind of spending money to answer various questions. We spend money every year to do water level checks to see where the water levels are in each one of these regions of our district. We help maintain weather stations. We spent money to collect AEM data to create a hydrogeologic framework. Each one of these things was done to answer a question. And now the money has been spent. We've been able to answer those questions. And now we have this wonderful collection of data that we can put together in a new framework, a new toolbox. So we have each of these tools, put them in a new toolbox, and we'll have an ability to answer more questions with data that we've already spent money on. We get more information from money that we've already spent, basically by creating this this numerical model. And I have JEO with me if there's any other specific questions. But I ask the directors to approve the motion that I have on the memorandum for the continuation and the construction of this hydrogeologic model.
Thank you, Philip.
Yeah.
Anyone else wish to make a presentation regarding this? Are you
it? I think I'm in it, unless okay. You guys want to hear something specific.
Okay. We have a motion on this item.
So moved.
A motion. You can have a second.
Second.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors.
Amanda, what's your take on this? Is this going to tie everything together and make it more useful for you and Philip and the whole staff?
Yeah. So, really, all the data we've collected has been leading to doing this exact thing.
So like Philip said, we can answer a lot more questions. We can provide direction to the board for rules and regulations. We can really work with the state to make sure that we're the best information is available so that we're not deemed fully appropriated if that's not the case. There's just a lot of reasons to go this route. I think it's really important for our district, and Philip's really knowledgeable about running models, so we actually are really lucky to have someone who can make adjustments and we can get quick answers about what different wells or, you know, different things are going to do in our district.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Go ahead.
And this will encompass the entire district then? The information that you're putting together will be a benefit to everybody in the entire district?
Yes. So this model will encompass the entirety of the district of Papio, Lower Platte North, and Lower Platte South. This is kind of contiguous with another model that was made 2 years ago in Lower Elkhorn. And so between the Lower Elkhorn model, our model that will encompass our three districts, will go contiguously over top of the state of Nebraska's Lower Platte Missouri tributaries model.
Will it be able to tell us how much water is under there in a given spot or not?
No. What this model will do, there's really kind of, okay. The models, when you build them, you always build them with a model objective in mind. What do you want this model to tell you? What answers do you expect this model to give you? And so in this case, this model would be kind of driving towards if you develop an area within our district, what will be the impacts to the streams, right? So you pump 100-acre-foot out of a well. How much of that 100-acre-foot is going to be coming from a stream? And so that will affect the various agreements that we have with the state and with other entities to have how much a certain stream flow within the stream. It'll also allow us to kind of to have an idea of what is happening within the aquifer itself and the model construction, or not the model, the aquifer construction. And so let's say that we want to develop a larger area with 200 new wells down by Springfield. What is going to be the overall impact to the aquifer, and what is going to be the impact to the wells around it? Right? Are we going to see a massive decline in water levels? Will people start running dry, or will this be something that is okay? Is this an acceptable kind of decrease in the aquifer that we can see? If earlier this spring where it was nice and droughty and dry, if that had continued to this year and next 3 years, what would we see on impacts to our wells? We can project that model out to kind of show those kind of impacts between climate and rainfall and or cropping, land development. We can modify those within the model and see what the overall impact of the aquifer that we should
include estimates of you put in irrigation systems into fields and so forth would help estimate how much water drawdown that would occur in 160 acres or a square mile, or you put in several wells or would not.
Yeah, I would look at this more as an aerial thing as opposed to an individual well, and so I would look at this like in a township or two or three township levels of development, and so you'd see then how that impact propagates around and spatially around them. Yeah. So you can do that, and you can modify, you know, recharge rates to the aquifer based upon irrigation efficiencies and things like that.
Because I asked that because it was exceptionally dry here a couple months ago, and several people had contacted me about their neighbors' irrigation pumps. They were concerned that that was going to draw their water levels down. I didn't know if you could determine how much water is under there. Like, how much water can they draw down, you know?
Yeah, and some of that really kind of has to do with the actual geophysics of the aquifer itself.
Sure.
And how much of that is known versus estimated. And that's part of why that AEM data was kind of done, is to kind of delineate where these areas of high conductivity are.
Okay.
What this model really tells us then is, so not so much the overall head, the absolute head of the groundwater levels, but rather the overall change that any kind of change we put to the model will induce to the aquifer. So,
okay. Right.
Like I said, if we put in a dozen more wells, where are we going to see the water levels in the aquifer in that area drop to a significant, to a certain percentage or not? Are we going to, if we have a really dry spell, are we going to see that same thing? You know, changes to the water that's in and around and going to that aquifer, we can see what external impact could be.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Any other questions?
Yes. And if there are any other questions throughout any of this process of this model construction, please feel free to reach out to me, because I'd love to talk all day about this, as much as you guys can stand.
Well, we hope it's not today. roll call.
Yes.
Yes.
Hi. Thank you.
Thank you.
Item number 8. Amendment to number 2 with Houston Engineering for Little Papio Calvert Group B. Martin Food.
Good afternoon. This project you've heard about for a couple of years now. In 2020, district actually approved the first contract with Houston Engineering, Fire at the time, and is actually, I might call it phase one. That was for design of these 46 culverts. And so what's happened since that time, we did an amendment in 2021, and that amendment was to allow for the construction observation administration of Group A, which is the first part of the project. We actually had 45 culverts, and 19 of those were in Group A, and the other 26 were in Group B. And so we split those out at the time because in terms of the Corps of Engineers approval process, it's easier to get it, a group of them basically started without having to go through a lot of back and forth with the Corps. Group B are more complicated, so it takes more time to get that resolved. So we've already did group, or phase one is done. Phase two is about done. That's, we're actually, all the pipes are in, all the rehab is basically done, just it's cleanup work. So phase two, which is group A, is done. Now we're talking about group B, which is basically the last phase of this project. And that would be to actually construct, operate, I guess, to administer the construction of these projects, this facility. So this amendment number 2 is a total of $532,630. If you look at the total cost of all three phases together, it's $1.4 million, roughly, $1.439,650. Excuse me. And so this is for the engineering course. This is not for construction, so there's actually a separate contract at some point. When the Corps actually blesses the design, we'll actually have then a construction contract. So that's down the road probably next spring, possibly. Usually this Corps process takes 6 months or longer to get approved. So, again, this is a much-needed project. These pipes are in poor shape. They have basically inverts that are rusted out. They're structurally, in some cases, not very good shape either. So maybe we'll go to the map, which is the last thing on the sequence there, Bill, and show you where these are located. This map's really hard to see, but it's basically from L Street up to north of Maple. And so they're all strung throughout the Little Papio, which is basically the Nebraska Furniture Mart area, the Midtown area, you would call it, Exarban, all the way up and down the creek. You may have been using the trail if you were a trail user last year and discovered all the interruptions in the trail, and that was caused by this Group A. So we're going to do this again to people who use the trail, unfortunately. But much needed. This project is built in the 60s, late, early 70s, and things were kind of wore out, unfortunately. The culverts kind of wore out. So we'll get this done. We'll be back to a project in really good shape. Tonight with me, I also have Lindy Rogers, too, if you got any questions from the standpoint of the engineering side. So I'll be happy to answer any questions. That's kind of an overview of what we're trying to do tonight or this afternoon.
Thanks, Martin. Does she want to say any comments?
Lindy Rogers with Houston Engineering. No, I just want to thank you for considering this amendment. And it's a really great project, and it'll really help out the community and the local areas that drain into the system.
So. Okay, thank you. Do we have any? We can have a motion on this item.
So moved. Second.
Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors?
I had one quick question. When will the bids go out for actual construction of this?
We'll probably solicit the bids this winter coming up, 2024. So it's all dependent on the Corps approval. So once the Corps approves it, then we'll get that construction bid package together and try to get it out as soon as we can. Realistically, we've actually budgeted some money this year for construction, but realistically, we're just going to be starting the project. And I should have mentioned early on, too, that all along in this project, the city's been sharing the cost. The city actually owns some of these culverts, and so about 50% of the cost is being paid by the city. And so they've agreed to pay, in this group A, they agreed to pay for their share of the construction as well as design. And they'll do the same thing on group B once we get the agreement to them. We have to present that to them hopefully next month or two. Now we've got through this phase of approvals. We'll get that agreement to them for approvals. But they'll be sharing the cost of this because these are actually storm sewers, in some cases, that drain out the city streets. And so.
And this amount of money that we're looking at paying here, that includes the oversight of all the construction to the very end or not?
Right. This next phase will be everything construction, everything design-wise, construction administration-wise, no construction costs, of course, but all the Houston fees should be done. And so far we've been on track.
So we won't see them in front of us again asking
hopefully
for
hopefully that will be the case, right?
Okay.
So far they've did really great. They've been under budget, and so we've been able to keep this project going. It's got a lot of moving parts, and there's always a lot of challenges that we don't always anticipate when you do a project like this because you really have a worn-out project. You don't really know what it's like to start working on it. Unfortunately, unlike a new car, you know what you have. Used car, you don't know what you have sometimes. So.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Roll call.
Jeff?
Yes.
Chairman?
Aye. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Item number 9, interlocal agreement with the City of Gretna for WP2 and Ghanavati.
Hello, good afternoon, everybody. So this agenda item is regarding agreeing to enter into an interlocal agreement with the City of Gretna for the WP2 regional detention basin. WP2 is very near the end of final design, and we are planning to begin construction in the next few months, in October, to be precise. So this is an important step to prepare us for that next phase of the project life. WP2 is going to be located near 180th Street and Giles Road, so it's not actually within the municipal boundaries of the City of Gretna, but it will be eventually incorporated, which is why they're a part of the agreement along with us. So I've attached the agreement. You should all have it, but I'll kind of go over a summary of some of the important points that are included within there. And if you have any specific questions on anything else or the project itself, I'd be happy to answer that. So many of these should be familiar, similar to many of our other projects, but just to run through somewhat quickly here. The district will construct the main dam, flood control and mitigation improvements, as well as the various recreational features that are going to be at the site. That'll include the list that's in the second bullet point, boat ramp, fishing pier, etc., as well as a trail that goes around the lake. The district will have sole discretion in naming the project in consideration of city and public recommendations. And the district will operate and maintain the water quality basin and main dam embankments along with some of the other major flood control improvements in perpetuity as we do with our various other flood control projects. And then lastly here, the district will own, operate, and maintain the remaining project components like the recreation mitigation improvements for 8 years following the completion of construction or until the city were to annex any land adjacent to the project. And so those are kind of the major points from the agreement. But if there's anything specific you'd like me to go over or for the project itself, I'd be happy to.
Thank you, Ian. We can have a motion on this item.
You're already
so moved. I'll move with staff recommendation as written.
Okay.
Second.
And a second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors?
I just have one quick question. What is Gretna responsible for? This is what we're responsible for, but what is...
So the transfer of operation and maintenance after 8 years once they annex the project land.
So we do everything until they annex it?
More or less,
okay.
In the agreement.
They annex it for 8 years.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Got it. Thank you.
That'll happen quick.
Any other questions? Roll call.
Bonnet?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Sherman?
Aye. I think that completes my report.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you, Director Conley. The time is 4:33, and I call the Finance Expenditure and Legal Subcommittee meeting to order. A copy of the Open Meetings Act, Nebraska Revenue Statute 84-1407 through 84-1414 is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for today's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action, and we ask that the public not interrupt the director's discussion and action at that time. Thank you. Quorum call, please.
Conley?
Hi.
Henningsen?
Here.
And
Director Davidson? Here. We need to adopt the agenda.
So move.
Second.
Yes.
Aye. And Director
Davidson. Aye, yes. Proof of publication is in our packet. It was in the Omaha World Herald. We'll start with item number 6, fiscal year budget, or 2024 budget draft number 2, John Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the second draft of the budget. Some proposed highlights, the proposed property tax mill levy of 0.033860. Last year's mill levy was 0.0347, which is currently a 2.7% reduction. Total tax requirements of $30,729,169, or $543,275 more than last year, which is a 1.8% increase. So we were directed by the board to keep it under 2, or 2 or below, and so we got it to 1.8. If approved, this will be the 18th out of 19 years that the district's property tax mill levy will have either been reduced or remained static. 12 years we reduced it, and 6 years of static. The budget is based off the 4.5% increase in assessed valuation. However, as we discussed during the budget workshop, we're expecting an 8-10% valuation increase district-wide. I believe it was 8.75 last year. You've probably been reading the articles on other entities and their budget requests. 1.8%, I don't think I've seen anywhere close to that. I'm guessing that we will drop our mill levy. If it's 8-10%, our mill levy will drop to the lowest it's been since 2005. So we will keep that one at 1.8% no matter what levy increase we get. Changes from the first draft, if you look through your document, they're in yellow, and there's just a handful of them. Page 3, the cash at the county treasurer's balance, that was updated. Page 4 and 5, special projects, we added $25,000 for a tree planting project at Prairie Queen Recreation Area. 200 trees will go in there as a coordination with the city of Bellevue or Papillion. Page 17, Papillion Creek 319 Watershed, we reduced the construction budget to reflect construction and project timing. And then page 19, Cramper Lake, we added funds for the installation of a kayak launch. Any improvements that we make at Cramper Lake is typically reflected. It's a reduced fee that we pay to Game and Parks for the management of the facility for the year. So we'll get that money back in a reduced fee. For putting in that amenity. Other than that, it remained exactly the same as the first draft that you've seen in July that we went through during the budget workshop. So happy to answer any questions for you. This is probably one of the lowest requests that we've had. We were able to do that this year. That's obviously, inflation was 4-5%. We're well below that. And so whatever valuation increase we get will be reflected in a lower mill levy. So we've already been able to drop it off the 4.5. It'll be reduced further when we get the final one in. We won't know those numbers till mid-August. But so This fully funds all of our projects, fully funds operation, fully funds all of our programs, and it's pretty solid. So if you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
All right, well done. Very impressive job of you and the entire team. But I need a motion to before we move any further.
So moved. Second.
Okay, roll call.
I'm sorry.
Oh, I got it. Anybody from the public would like to speak? Welcome.
Sean Malotz, Omaha, Nebraska. I have a few budget items that I'd like to discuss, but I think I missed, or maybe it wasn't presented, some comments regarding the culvert project. And I'm looking at that with respect to the budget, so maybe we can give me some latitude on this. On page 15 of the budget, I see here that the vote was for $1.4 million on the sites, but in the budget there's $2.2 million, so I would assume that that'll be get adjusted based on what the board votes on. It's off to the right under the contract work. Also, you may want to adjust the sites because it mentions Group A is 21 sites in the budget and Group B is 25, which differs from what we heard at the on the discussion regarding the budgets. And then quick question, and I don't have this in writing, but you mentioned that Omaha is reimbursing for these budget or for these culverts, and I noticed there's $800,000 in the budget. Is that for the A's or the B's?
A's.
That's A's. Do you have an estimate of what the B numbers were? And that 800 is the total, or is there more coming in?
They pay over some years.
Okay. Do they do a percentage of the project?
They do. Certain culverts belong to them.
So it depends. Okay. Okay. So, you know, I guess if you could backfill and let me know if the budget will be adjusted for what's voted for at the board meeting on Thursday, I would assume so. Now, drawing to my budget questions, here's a couple copies so that John has one. On the page 4, on the references to the increase in salaries, there's a significantly more increase than what I've kind of done the math on the notes regarding the increase in wages. There's a $170,000 increase in admin, which is 21%, $400,000 plus on technical, which is 9.5%, and maintenance is in excess of $100,000, which is a 16%, and overall it's $683,000 change in just salaries. And that's on page 4. Number 4560, 4570, and 4580 are the account numbers. And I'm comparing actual of 23 to budget. So, you know, I understand there's some increase and there's some staff additions, but to me that increase seems quite significant. On page 4 on the Blair Building, I would like to know what the timeline is on that project, if you have an estimated start month and complete month. And on page 21, there is a contribution of $200,000 to the South Sarpy Springfield Water Quality Implementation. I would question why that isn't reimbursed by the Sarpy County Watershed Partnership. That partnership on page 47 has over $3 million in their cash reserves. So to me, that could be something that could be drawn from that entity rather than from the taxpayer money out of the NRD. On page 33, and I know these are little tweaks, but every little bit makes some difference in my estimation. I was somewhat confused on the Glacier Creek mitigation, why there was a $2.9 million budget for construction, and 1.3 was spent, and where did the other difference go, the 1.5 million, 1.6 million? I don't know if it was an over-budget item or something changed on the project. And then my last question is, it's kind of a policy question. Throughout this budget, there are several million dollars of carryover numbers on projects. A lot of them are multiple years. I would ask the board to consider making some type of policy that if these projects aren't completed within a certain time period, whether it's 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, or some kind of time frame, that they have to re-input for a request for funds. Because what happens is those numbers continually carry over, and they're in your budget year after year. And if they weren't, we could see a tax decrease rather than maintaining those over year over year over year in your cash reserves. It's just something I would suggest to explore and maybe ask the question, how long have these projects, carryover projects, been in the budget? I've provided a copy to John. I'd appreciate a response, hopefully, by Thursday, so I can respond, can do some.
The one thing I will on the procedure, the policy for the carryover projects, so a lot of our the projects that we, like the Urban Drainage Way Program and those, we have implemented basically kind of a two-year type of agreement, unless it's a multi-year agreement. So sometimes we'll have a multi-year reimbursement where it'll take longer for them to complete the project. Big thing, obviously, is permitting. So that is just so difficult to know when they will get permits for certain things. So, but like the Trails Assistance Program, things like that, I'm on Eric all the time every year. Hey, are they going to do this project this year? Have they started it? If at least they started it, we know they're going to get done the next fiscal year. We'll carry it over. If not, then we try to tell them, hey, come back and reapply because we're going to take that out. So we've done a better job of doing that. These used to carry over for multiple years, but now we're starting to either we do a long-term agreement, 3-4 years, or 2 years, or we say, hey, you've got a couple years, and then we're going to take you out, and you're going to reapply. So that's what we've been doing with those. Some of our other projects, like reservoirs and levees and Glacier Creek and Missouri River Levee, those are career projects. It took us 15 years to do the Missouri River Levee, or not 15, but 10. It took us 7 years to get the permit. So that's where you're going to see those budget items consistently over and over and over again, because you don't know when you're going to get it. So I could take construction out, and then, hey, here's your permit, and I can't do the project. So that's where you see a lot of that carryover from. So we continue to work on that and get those cleaned up as much as possible.
Maybe for transparency, you could, on the carryover projects, note what year they were approved, and then it won't be a question.
Yeah, we know. I mean, internally, we know.
I meant for the public.
And then we'll take those off as a
Thank you for your comment.
Thank
Anything
you.
Else? Okay. Thank you for your comments. I saw them writing feverishly over there, so I'm sure I got video. So anybody else from the public would like to speak? Here's your chance. Nope. Okay. Seeing none, I will move on to the directors. Any director questions?
Okay.
Call for a vote. Yeah. Roll call.
Aye.
Henningsen?
Yes.
And Director Davidson?
Yes. All right, we have a couple dates to remember for the 2024 budget process. August 10th, 2023, public input meeting and approval of the proposed fiscal year 2024 budget. And on September 12th of 2023, the budget hearing adoption of the fiscal year 2024 budget and special hearing to set the tax levy for 2024 will be held right here. Item number 7, land acquisition DS-7, Ian Gonavanti. Do we have to go to executive session?
Yeah, I recommend you go to the executive
session. For the next three items? Or do you want to just...
We'll go.
Okay. All right, so I will... do I have a motion to go in executive session?
Hi.
Yes. The time is...
Of executive session? Okay, it's a vote.
Yeah, this has to be the vote. And,
right.
It's my first time doing this. So.
Okay.
All right, the time is 5:03, and I need a motion to come out of executive session.
So moved.
Second.
All right, roll call.
Conley?
Aye.
Henningsen?
Yes.
And Dr. Davidson?
Yes. All right, we'll go back to land acquisition, item number 7, land acquisition, DS-7. Do I have a motion?
So moved, staff recommendation.
Second.
Roll call.
Henningsen?
Yes.
Aye.
And Dr. Davidson. Yes. We'll go to item number 8, land acquisition, WP2. I need a motion for that.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call, sorry.
Conley?
Aye.
Henningsen?
Yes.
And Dr. Davidson?
Yes. And then finally, item number 9, land acquisition, DS-19. I need a motion for that.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call.
Henningsen?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
Aye. It is 5:04, and that concludes my report.
Okay, the time is 5:05, and I'll call to order the meeting of the Ad Hoc Consultant Selection Subcommittee for the NRD Hazard Mitigation Plan Update. A copy of the Open Meetings Act, Nebraska Revised Statutes number 84-1407 through 84-1414 is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. And prior to turning to the agenda for today's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations, and then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action, and we ask that the public not interrupt the directors' discussion and actions. Thank you. Let's have a quorum call, please.
Aye.
Conley?
Aye. Here. Adoption of the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
And can we have a roll call for that?
Conley?
Aye.
Conley?
Aye.
Yes, there's a proof of publication of meeting posted in the back. And so we will start now with Lori Lester, the initial screening and proposals for our ad hoc committee.
So the district coordinates a hazard mitigation plan for all of the communities within our district. There's a document required by FEMA to be eligible for certain types of grant funding. We initially started coordinating this plan in 2006, and it's required to be updated every 5 years. Our next update is due to be completed and approved by FEMA in June of 2026, which is not as far as it sounds. So in order to get this done, we have to apply for a grant, our planning grant this year. And so we advertised for proposals to help us with this plan update. Proposals were due on August 2nd, and we received one proposal from JEO Consulting Group, and they have done our previous two updates.
Is that all you have for us?
That's okay. All I have for you.
JEO does a good job for us, I'm assuming, right?
Yes.
Yeah, no problem with that. Okay, do we need a motion to start with, or what? Can I have a motion to accept what JEO? Should I read this, what we've gotten for? Okay, because we only have one candidate, and a very qualified candidate, I'm going to suggest this. The ad hoc subcommittee recommends to the board of directors to waive the interview process under Director Policy 15.2, since only one engineering firm submitted a proposal in response to the advertised request for proposal, and that the general manager negotiate a contract with JEO Consulting Group, Incorporated, to provide professional services to update the district's multi-hazard mitigation plan. So I move that.
Second. Is there any discussion from the public on this?
Anybody of the directors have any questions? If not, Let's have a roll call.
Bonnet?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
And Chair?
Yes. And that's all we have for this. So we are adjourned.
Well done. Now that's a subcommittee report.
Here's a way better one.
Well done.